You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Gina Vericchio. If I get it pronounced right?
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Very good. Gina, it's good to have you on the show this morning. Thanks for coming in and joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the way we start is with this awkward question. Who are you? What are some stories or labels or qualities of a person that you would like to have as the opening picture? And then we will build out the picture with the stories that matter to you and some conversation, because this is about getting to know each other and how we go through that awkward beginning step.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is actually kind of a nice context to be asked that question in. Often I'm asked that question, you're at a dinner party or someone's house, and what they really mean is, what do you do for a living?
Right. You have to distinguish when the question's real and when it's...
Well, it's really great because I don't have a real solid answer to the what do you do for a living. I do have a job, but it's a very small part of my day-to-day life. So being asked this in a way that you want to know more is actually really nice. Who am I? I am a mom. I am a partner. I am a really involved member of my community, my immediate community, but there's sort of circle upon circle of that community, and I like to be...
Blanketing out across
exactly.
the region of the globe.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And what else am I? Those are kind of the key focal
labels.
Points for me right now.
Okay.
Okay.
No, that is a start. That is a start. And we will come back because what you are not is a job. You're not a role. Although you have
no
many roles.
No, that's definitely true.
And I guess what I would ask, what story or what quality of a person is something that you've come to treasure? As a piece of representative of who you are.
For myself.
For yourself.
Well, I would say that I strive for authenticity a lot. Quakers, which is a group with which I identify myself, would use the word integrity here, but that's a big part of what I do, sort of, I don't know, just on my experiences in the world, what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, testing myself periodically and figuring out, is that really true? Is that really what you think about that? Is that really how you feel about that?
Right.
And trying to be willing to backpedal a little bit when the answer is no.
Right. And actually, you have just described the practice of spiritual discipline, which is constantly checking in to see, is this real? Is this true? Is this... in some sense, honorable and worthwhile. And authenticity and integrity, those are two words. The authenticity emphasizes that we are the author of our lives.
I'm sure you're right. I never thought about it that way.
And integrity means that all the pieces are working together. And they support each other, even if they may at periodically lock up with frustration or whatever. So that's my riff on it. If I could take
excellent,
a
I like it. I like it.
So we're gonna start with some music, and shall we start with Cat Stevens?
Let's
if
do
you
it.
Want to sing out? Do you want to say something before that, or? It's just a good song.
Yeah, it is a great song, and it is a song that when I first heard this song, I was probably in my early teens, and it just felt like a really freeing ballad about what the world can be.
Living out loud.
Yes.
Here you go. Cat Stevens, If You Want to Sing Out.
Well, if you want to sing out, sing out. And if you want to be free, be free. 'Cause there's a million things to be. You know that there are. And if you want to live high, live high. And if you want to live low, live low. 'Cause there's a million ways to go. You know that there are. You can do what you want. The opportunity's on. And if you find a new way, can do it today. You can make it all true, and you can make it undo. You see, it's easy. You only need to know. Well, if you want to say yes, say yes. And if you want to say no, 'cause there's a million ways to go. You know that there are. And if you want to be me, be me. And if you want to be you, be you. 'Cause there's a million things to do. You know that there are. You can do what you want. The opportunity's on. And if you find a new way, you can do it today. You can make it all true, and you can make it undo. You see, it's easy. You only need to know. Well, if you want to sing out, sing out. And if you want to be free, be free. 'Cause there's a million things to be. You know that there are, you know that there are, you know that there are, you know that there are. You know that there are.
And that was Cat Stevens. If you want to sing out, sing out. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Gina Vericchio. So Gina, looking back on your life, what kinds of experiences, what have you lived through or observed that has really helped to shape how you approach life and who you are?
I feel like there's some very specific points in my life. Like if I were to draw a roadmap of my life, there are definite places that, you know, were stopovers that that changed the course of events.
Yeah. So what what were some of those? Maybe towards the earlier end or not? What are the ones that stand out to you?
Well, when I was, you know, it would be 1995. So I'm going to say 19, maybe.
Yeah.
I hiked the Appalachian Trail, and I'll just put in a disclaimer right here. I was not what they call a purist, so my feet have not touched every mile of that trail. So for all the Appalachian Trail hikers that are listening, just know that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was actually part of the learned experience for me was... Mm-hmm. One, just the rite of passage of going out and doing something totally on my own that I'd never experienced before. I'd never even been camping before.
Right.
That just sort of a, you know, it's almost a model of life in some ways. You know, this idea that you've chosen a path and you will hit various obstacles and then you have to decide as you go along. So it was like a rehearsal in some ways, you know, getting lost or getting injured. And do I keep going or do I not? And right. Okay, I guess
I
will.
Where do I heal up? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And things like it being completely acceptable to, for me at least.
Yes.
To get off the trail and get on someplace else where I felt like I needed to be for whatever reason or,
right. Right.
Yeah, so that was definitely a formative experience for me. It made me feel like I had that I had control over the direction of my life, which was not a feeling that I had had before that.
Right. What possessed you to choose that challenge?
This is such a horrible story. well, I heard about the Appalachian Trail because I was up late watching Unsolved Mysteries one night, actually, and heard about a horrible murder on the Appalachian Trail. And about halfway through the story, I stopped paying any attention to the murder part and thought, the Appalachian Trail, what is that? That sounds so interesting. And so I went, because you couldn't Google things at the time.
Right.
Went to the library, got out a few books on the Appalachian Trail, and it just sounded like exactly what I needed at that time, something that seemed daunting but approachable, people had done it before, but nobody I knew had done it before.
And
life was fine at the time, but I had no concept of where I was going or what I was doing, and things weren't feeling particularly meaningful. I think a place people get a lot of the time.
Yeah. But I mean, and what you described, it's something that captured your interest. And what's really neat is that you remember the awkwardness of how you, you know, first got tuned into it.
Yeah. I wouldn't answer my mom how I heard of the Appalachian Trail for like 2 years.
but the thing is there's a, you know, when it comes to learning these really important questions about who you are, is you have to take a risk that's big enough to scare you, but not so big that if you fail at it, it will completely humiliate you.
Right. It has to scare you, but not scare you off.
Right. And we don't remember that. And at all points in life, there's that you know, the assessment, is this too big? Is this big enough? Is it not big enough?
You know? Right.
Yeah. And so that's really neat. So you kind of got your life started. So what happened? You know, how does the injury, the choice to stay on but not to walk every mile of it, you know, how do those choices continue on in your life?
It's interesting because they used to continue on in such a visceral way. Like it was a, you know, I would reflect back on literal moments in that walk. Now that I'm separated.
And you're 20 years out of it.
Oh, I'm more than 20 years out of it now, right?
You said 95.
Oh, you're right.
So that's 20.
It's 20 years. Yeah. Okay, take it back. My math apparently is lacking. Right. Well, my brain seems more than 20 years out of it, I should say. So being separated by distance and time, and then there's a lot of experiences that have happened in between now and then. I don't tend to reflect on it in quite so much a specific way, but I do carry with me... I do carry with me that feeling of freedom that I discovered, a feeling that I hadn't had before, sometimes in a wistful way where I think back and think, gosh, I wish I could recapture that feeling of freedom. But sometimes just in a, just knowing that it's there, whether I'm experiencing it at that moment or not, it allows me to believe that things are possible, even if I'm not experiencing them right now.
Right. You've known a different reality.
Yeah.
You can know yet another reality.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So let's set that aside. What, okay, since then, you know, or what formative experiences? Yeah. What has caught your attention? What has helped to kind of force you to put things together in a new way or a renewed way?
I would say, it's a classic, definitely the birth of my son was a turning point for me in lots of ways. I never anticipated being in a long-term relationship, having children. Those were not things that I really fantasized about when I was younger. You know, when I found out I was pregnant with my son, I was working a backcountry job for the state of New Jersey on the Appalachian Trail, actually. And had been working a series of seasonal jobs and planned to continue down that path. And this kind of shifted a lot of things for me. It was a very emotional time. I felt like I was losing my whole vision of life, and it was not an exciting, blissful...
It wasn't a welcome kind of a pregnancy initially.
No, definitely not. Then figuring out what to do with that as time moved on, you know, certainly once there was an actual honest to goodness child there, and you know, as this is so cliche, but of course I couldn't envision my life not having my son in it, and it's. In thinking back now, I wouldn't have even said this 5 years ago, truthfully, but in thinking now, part of the reason that I felt so upset and uncomfortable and lost at the time was because it was making me put aside a these things that I had planned or hoped for, but also because it was what we were talking about before, about something has to be just scary enough to push your boundaries, but not so big as to, you know, scare you off, that this had moved into the so big category. This was just the other side of that.
Yeah.
And so I had to push my, I had to make myself a lot bigger than I was in order to take this on, which did take a lot of years to do it comfortably.
Right. What did you wrestle within yourself? What did you have to push out to get bigger, to create? What had to change in you to create space for a child and a change in life?
Right. I mean, of course, there was silly things like, you know, I changed up my employment a little bit. And I there were those kinds of things. But really part of, and I'm still in this process, was re-envisioning, you know, what that discovery of freedom and all possibilities was at 19, how that can look at 40, you know, how that can look and forward from here, you know,
That
isn't, you know, skipping through the woods by yourself, because it's not where I am right now. And I've begun to see glimpses of that, of how being with my son opens up pieces of myself that I likely wouldn't have had access to otherwise, both the good and the bad. but how that is creating a kind of freedom that I didn't know at 19.
Right.
So it's more of a trade than it is a relinquishing of, you know, oh, I no longer have freedom or these dreams or whatever.
Right.
It's more like, nope, I'm going to need to, I'm going to change those with a few other things.
Right, right. And I think there's a sense in which freedom is a wanting of an ongoing quality of naivete and freshness.
I think that's probably
true. And part of letting that go is realizing that freedom can come within relationships or within structures that hold us in ways that, that we can't skip through them as easily as we might have.
And that freedom has a sustainability that the other doesn't.
Right.
Not quite the same feeling of blissfulness that happens, I would say. But
there may be moments of bliss within it, but it doesn't have that quality of ongoing abandon.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's true.
Yeah. Neat. Yeah. Well, let's cut to some music again.
Okay.
What would you like to go to at this point? I don't know if this is time for the two songs back to back, or do you want to lead into them?
It could be.
So
also be the Joni Mitchell one.
Sure,
and
sure,
that the mention of my son puts me very much.
Okay. So we're gonna go to, you know, what can also be a cliche, but it's very well stated.
It definitely
is. It's incredibly
is.
Well stated, and it's Joni Mitchell and the Circle Game, and this is from the Ladies of the Canyon album.
Yesterday, a child came out to wander, caught a dragonfly. Fearful when the sky was full of thunder, and tearful at the falling of a star. And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on a carousel. Behind from where we came, and go round and round and round in the circle again. Then the child moved 10 times round the seasons, skated over 10 clear frozen streams.
like when you're older must appease him. And promises of someday make his dreams.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came and go.
Sixteen summers gone now. Cartwheels turn to car wheels through the town. And they tell him, take your time, it won't be long now. Till you drag your feet to slow the circles down.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel of time. We can't return, we can only look behind from where we came.
Better dreams and plenty before the last revolving year is through.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel of time. Return, we can only look behind from where we came and go round and round and round in the circle again.
And go round and round and round in the circle again.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Gina Vericchio. So Gina, the circle game. And that song is important to both you and to your son.
Yeah, I was saying during the break that this is one of my son's very favorite songs. I think it was he didn't really sleep as an infant. We like to say he got his first good night's sleep when he was 3. And so
my daughter was when she could crawl herself to exhaustion.
Nice.
Because prior to that, it was 2 3.5 hour stints with 3 hours of entertainment time in the middle of the night.
Nice.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. My son would only sleep when he was in motion. So we had a whole schedule of who was carrying and then woke up the next one and all of that. But we did a lot of singing in that time. And this was one of the songs sung on repetition. And it's, one of his very favorite songs now. So, which is, I had also mentioned during the break, I find particularly significant right now. For whatever reason, this year, I'm really feeling my age, I guess, or I'm just feeling age is what I'm feeling. And so to recognize that he occupies one slot in this song and I occupy a different slot in this song.
Right.
I don't know.
For me, you're a generation apart.
We are. In a very literal sense. Yes.
No, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful. And it's neat. one of the things that is so when we resolve issues about what to do in our lives, we oftentimes lose the fraughtness, and the and part of resolution is no longer having to live with sure. the ambiguity and the indecision. And so to hear you tell your story before about coming to peace and creating space in your life, and then having this song become emblematic of something that you share.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, you've both grown up.
Right.
And in a certain way, that may not, you know, at 11, this may not be important to him for much longer, because he may go in other ways. He may not. Kids are funny that way. You can't predict them. But you have that now, and mm-hmm. that's really neat treasure. Yeah. So, you know, tell me, you came to this area for a farm sanctuary job?
I did. I got a job with Farm Sanctuary. I'm not very good with the passage of time. I'm not sure. Well, I was pregnant with my son, so I can use that as a good marker of time. Let's say 12 years ago.
Right.
And I got a job working on a project called the Veg for Life Project. It was basically writing and organizing educational materials for not so much about the animal rights piece of it as mm-hmm. it was about the practical pieces of, you know, so you're out of school and you want to create some vegetarian options for your school lunches. Here's what you can do. I hesitate to go much further into it. Let us say, for so many reasons, it was just not a good fit for a job.
Oh, for you. Yeah.
It really was not. Yeah. But that piece of it never really even had to be dealt with because, as I said, I was pregnant with my son at the time. He was extremely early. Uh-huh. He was 9.5 weeks early. Oh, so wow. You know, very quickly overnight found myself not returning to that job for several months while my son was in the NICU. And, you know, we were struggling through all of those kinds of things. And I never did actually go back to that job.
Right.
But yeah, that's why we moved here originally. We did the opposite of most people and left for graduate school. My partner was in graduate school in Texas, but then we came back after That was 2007.
Did you grow up here, or did you?
I didn't. No, I grew up in Austin, Texas.
Okay, so that was going in some sense back for you.
Sort of. Anybody who's from Texas, he went to school in Denton, Texas, the University of North Texas. And North Texas and Austin are very, very different breed of
worlds
everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of like Lubbock. And Denton is probably closer to Abilene or Lubbock.
It's actually near the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
So it's not so far.
No. But it's still maybe 4-ish hours from Austin. And, you know.
A whole universe of experience away.
Definitely. Okay. It's got some good things about it for sure, but it was.
So how have you, we've talked about formative events, but we haven't talked about how you've changed. You know, what are some of the values that you started out life with, or some of the things that you thought were important that you may have had to let go of? And what are some of the things that you have found that you have come to treasure that you didn't necessarily think had any value early on?
Yeah, that, I would say this has been a kind of a key theme for me in the last year or two is realizing that there are things that I've come to know and things that I've stepped away from in time.
I'm not being flip here, but there is a quality of 40. There is a quality of hitting midlife.
I'm telling you, I'm feeling it this year.
That begins to make some of those things. And some people, you know, people used to joke that I was born at the age of 40 because I was born with lots of older siblings and mm-hmm. older. And my dad died when I was young, so I was born into a level of visceral wisdom that isn't always helpful. But you know, but for most people, there comes a point where they're doing just what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So what's it look like?
So, you know, I would say that a lot of, you know, if I was going to make a little list, you know, I believe... kind of a list. I think that that list would have gotten shorter and shorter, actually, as the years have moved forward. And it isn't so much that I, you know, have become jaded and believe nothing now, or it's not that. It's really that, that things that I would have espoused as being a belief that I held and would have held very close to me, I don't so much anymore. I feel like I hold things generally less and less close. I feel like I'm not being very specific. So a good example maybe would be, there's a lot of things that I do in the world now, or that I value in the world, connecting with people, caring for other people as best I can.
With food or
with
kids,
food,
or
I do love to
bring
people food.
You're having a child
food.
At your house during the day.
Yes, or, yes. Yeah. Caring for other people's children. I do prison work, as you and I have talked about before, and go into Elmira Prison and work with a program called the Alternatives to Violence Program there. I don't know. I help with lots of, you know, if there's a project that comes up and somebody asks, hey, will you help organize this thing? Sometimes to my detriment and sometimes in a good way, I'll say, sure.
Right.
So those things I would say have been true of me forever, for as long as I can remember. I remember having a conversation with my mom when I was maybe in third or fourth grade. My parents were divorced. My dad lives a little sidetrack here, but my dad lived in New Jersey and we were in Texas. And so I would go up in the summers, and I remember telling my mom that I had this plan that I was going to walk around the neighborhood and I was going to collect stuff to hand out in the subway station when I went to visit my dad, because we would always go into New York City.
Sure.
And people always asked me for things, and I always felt terrible that I didn't have anything. You know, at the time I didn't even have money. You know, I was like 8 or something.
Yeah.
And my mom saying, you know, I don't think that's a good idea, and you can't take all these things with you. And I don't remember exactly what she said, but saying, you know, that idea is not going to work. But I think of that now, in that that's totally something that I would say now. And I might recognize, okay, there's pieces of this idea that won't work, but there's pieces of it that will work, and here's what I would do to go about them. So I don't know. So some parts of me are very much the same. I feel like if you met me in third grade and you met me now, you would think, oh, you got taller. And that's that might be the most significant thing.
Yeah, a generosity of spirit.
Right.
Used a word that I want to come back to.
Yeah.
And that the list of things that I believe would have been longer. And would have been very detailed, is what I got the sense of, and this kind of a checklist of things that would have been right, and or honorable or good or whatever, and you would have been deeply committed to that list.
Yeah, definitely.
What you have just said is profoundly linked with the word belief. And its root, which is beloved. Over the last 200 years, belief came to mean ideological or rational propositional statements that we hold on to, rather than the notion that this is something that we love, and what we love is somewhat, we can get real detailed about it, but once you get real detailed about it, it's more about yourself than about the other thing that you love. You know what I mean? And one of the things that I see that happens with life, with midlife, is that our love becomes more simple. We don't need to line it out with the kind of conditional things, and we can love things that we cannot affect or change, and still, with full integrity, love them. And that's a powerful, powerful statement. And I feel that it's much of it is implicit in what you said. I may be projecting into it, but much of it's implicit in what you said.
No, I feel like you have articulated something that I have experienced, but not necessarily had the words to describe. Something that I've found about those beliefs is that there's what has trumped that list for me over the years is a desire to be connected to other people. Mm-hmm. And I found that that list creates a barrier often between me and other people. And
you're checking the list rather than having a relationship.
It's partly that, but it's partly, you know, if you walk into something and say, this is where I stand, it really changes the dynamics of what's going to happen after that. But if you walk into a situation and you say, where do you stand? It changes everything about what's going to happen next, and it changes where I stand.
Right.
And it should, to me. Yeah.
And it actually, and you framed it so that you have the exact defensive reverse. Where do you stand? But you could say, where do we stand?
It's true. Often people don't know what to do in that latter step. So often I go to the first one.
Yeah. Because it's also being kind when people are groping, when they don't know what to do, when you give them something to react to.
It's true. Yeah. Well, and something I'm going to be all about derailing us. This is probably not what you do on the radio, but here we are. I was thinking of a story that I told recently at the prison, actually. And we were talking about our family relationships, which comes up a lot. And I was talking about my relationship with my father. My father, though my parents were divorced, has always been in my life in some way. Some of it peripheral, but he's always
presence.
Been around. Yeah. And I was talking about, you know, once I got to the age where I was no longer, it was not mandated anymore that I go visit on certain schedules at certain times. I didn't visit for a while, and neither of us really called each other. I feel like we must have talked to each other a little bit, but we didn't make much of an effort.
Yeah.
And I remember struggling in my mind, you know, trying to contact him and thinking, gosh, why won't you just meet me halfway? Why won't you meet me halfway? And that became almost a mantra for me for a number of years. And it just hit me one day that he actually was not able to meet me halfway at that time. But I was able to meet him 75% of the way, and I just wasn't doing it. Because whatever sense of fairness I had established in my mind, this sort of rule book, that in order for us to do this, we had to give equally of the same thing. But that was kind of a formative experience too, realizing that fair doesn't have to mean equal, you know, that fair is doing what you can for the situation to the best of your ability. And for me, I had more ability. And these days he does give more than his 25%. Because we were able to establish that relationship and grow it.
Right. And in a contractual relationship that's not about... there are charity relationships where people give. And this is not about charity. It's also not about a contract where you decide what is equitable and fair. It's what's called a covenant. And in a covenant relationship, we do for others what they cannot do for themselves but need in order to thrive. And we ask from others to do for us what we cannot do for ourselves but need in order to thrive. So if I can reach out 90% of the way and that person can reach out 10, then we're good.
Right.
And if they can reach out further, then I can step back because they can do it for themselves. Or if I need to go the whole way with the stretch, like you were talking about getting pregnant, you have to make a stretch to do something you don't know that you can do. And you have to own it. But when you own it, whatever the outcome, you learn from it. And you have this long-term relationship with your dad.
And I guess what we were talking about before about, you know, that list of beliefs serving as a barrier, this I think is a piece of that, a reflection of that. I guess it's transforming relationships that I was previously treating as contractual into covenant relationships, even sometimes relationships with people that I don't know yet.
Right. It's a different way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
And institutions are built around contracts. And about specific roles, and everything, people are limited to what they can do so that they do exactly that and nothing more and nothing less. But in this kind of more spontaneous world where you don't necessarily have a conventional job and you live, this is the quality of life that happens in that less institutionally defined space. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Let's cut to music.
Okay.
What would you like to go to now?
Well, this could be a reasonable spot for that.
For Beyonce?
Our two juxtaposed, or maybe the opposite of that one first.
The opposite of that one, which would be the Bad Religion? Conquer the World. Okay.
The used to be versus the...
Okay. Okay, so yeah, let's hear that. Okay, so Bad Religion, I Want to Conquer the World, and it's a brief one, but we will...
It used to be my very favorite song.
Hey, Brother Christian, with your high and mighty Aaron, your action speaks so loud, I can't hear a word you're saying. Hey, sister, bleeding heart, with all of your compassion, your labors do the hurt, but can't assuage temptation. Hey, man of science, with your perfect rules of measure, can you improve this place with the data that you gather? Hey, Mother Mercy, can your laws bear fruit forever? Is your fecundity a trammel or a treasure? And I want to conquer the world, give all the idiots a brand new religion, put an end to poverty, uncleanliness, and toil, promote equality in all of my decisions with a quick wink of the eye, and God, you must be joking. Hey, Mr. Diplomat, with your worldly aspirations, did you see your children cry when you left them at the station? Hey, moral soldier, you've got righteous proclamations and precious stones to fuel your pulpy conflagrations. And I wanna conquer the world, give all the idiots a brand new religion, put an end to poverty and cleanliness and toil, promote equality and all of my decisions. I want to conquer the world, expose the corporates and beat them to the children, do away with their pollution, and then I'll save the world.
Bad Religion, and I Want to Conquer the World, and you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and Gina Vericchio is our guest. So Gina, that's song number one. Where does that take us?
Well, we were both in here laughing while this was playing. This was my very favorite song for a long time, and I don't know. I thought this was a great song, and I still think it's a good song, actually, but... Mm-hmm. Something that, you know, when Eric asked me to come up with some songs that were in some way reflective of myself or my life experience or something, aside from the fact that this is a song that I really liked in my early 20s, I just thought of this as a song that expressed kind of how I felt, that vehemence of the I believe list, and how I needed to get out there. And, you know, as the song says, you know, I'll do with air pollution and then I'll save the whales. Then there'll be peace on earth and global communion. Darn it. I'm going to get out there and I'm going to do that. And the way to do that is that all of you are just going to have to follow this map that I'm going to give you as to how the world is going to work itself out. Okay. Ready? Go.
Right.
I mean, part of that I think is like the spirit of being 20 something is
fully alive, you know, fully present.
Yes. And going at it with life. Everything you're worth. But the reason that, you know, I'm giggling so much as we play this song now is that it is, excuse me, so different from what I feel about it now. Sorry, I'm a little crackly. I'm going to get a little sip of water.
Yeah. And do you want to say about where you are now, or do you want to go and play the Beyonce piece?
We could. Right, that I moved from punk to pop.
Actually, that has its own meta, that has its own justice.
It does, but I guess, I feel, I do feel like that there are changes that I would like to see in the world. Mm-hmm. Most of those some of those changes I feel like are born of me, but most of them are the changes that I hear people say they need help making in the world. Uh-huh. And that there's a lot less of a sort of hostile takeover feel to addressing that,
right, right,
than there is when I profess these are the changes that need to be made in the world,
right.
And so, yeah. So I guess it's just a very different thing. Did we want to play the other
if you want
song yeah. now? Yeah, sure. So I picked this next song as a better reflection of
where you are.
Yeah, kind of where I am.
Okay.
I wanna leave my footprints on the sands of time. No, there was something that meant something that I left behind. When I leave this world, I'll leave no regrets. Leave something to remember so they won't forget I was here.
Beyonce and I Was Here. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Gina Vericchio. So Gina, your desire to have an impact is much more kind of within and among people than on them, in terms of the way you've grammatically phrased it.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
And just to give it kind of what I want to ask next is how have you how have you developed a spiritual life or a what do you do, to put it less in a less directive way, what do you do on a daily basis, weekly, monthly, annual basis to kind of restore yourself emotionally, physically, intellectually? How do you take care of yourself? You've spoken about having a Quaker practice, but what does it mean to you? I don't think as a in general we talk openly about the things we do to try to take care of ourselves intentionally, whether they work or not all the time. But just what do we try to do?
Yeah, I should do more, which is probably a common answer you hear.
Exactly.
But
okay. You can have your, you can do your bow to guilt and we can go on.
It's not so much about a guilt as it is, you know, that I do have a feeling of fatigue a lot. I think that's a clear sign that a little more could be done to restore.
So it's just a factual thing.
Cool. Some of what I do, I feel like, you know, sort of creates its own restorative feedback loops. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying not to harp on the same thing, but the prison, going into the prison, sure. for example, it's an opportunity for me to meet with groups of people that I would otherwise not be in the same room with, probably, and have conversations that I don't have on a day-to-day basis because, you know, we come in with an agenda of things and we talk about who you are and what you believe and things like this. So being able to have those conversations in a new environment with new perspectives and new ideas, that new piece of it is a huge part. I come back really jacked up after I spend a weekend in the prison or after a Tuesday night support group. So that is something that feeds me. I teach classes for local homeschoolers, and that's also something that takes... you know, it takes a lot of planning and energy and all of that. But they love the classes and, you know, I hear positive things from them and I watch them problem solve things that, you know, people would say is definitely not, you know, definitely not that age group will never understand that concept. And I totally watch them figure it out.
Right.
And that kind of stuff is actually restorative while at the same time it's doing the things that I want to do.
Sure. So you try to, I hear you're trying, on one level, you're trying to do the things that also feed you. They feed others, they feed you.
Right. Well, they're not sustainable for long if they don't. Like there has to be something there. And, you know, I would say another thing that I do is spending time with people. I am not much of an introvert. I do value independent time. I need it intensely, but in very small bursts.
Right.
And then I need to get out and talk to people.
Right.
And that's really, that's part of what keeps me going. And Quaker practice, which, you know, since it's foreign to a lot of people, involves a lot of silent and reflective space, a lot of listening. But it's also for me a safe space to rehearse putting myself out there with, you know, all the protective netting under me that I might need.
Right.
Just seeing what happens, what's too much and what's too little.
Right.
And then being able to take those skills out into the world kind of helps keep me from getting as burnt out as I might otherwise.
It sounds like it helps to right-size you.
Right-size? That's not a term I know.
That means it means to not push too, not try to be too big or be too little, but to be what's appropriate for the energy or the force to be reckoned with, no more, no less.
Yeah.
And in the Christian and many of the world's religious traditions, the one of the great sins of the two, one is to not see reality clearly. That's idolatry, and the other one is to think of yourself as better or as worse than others. And so you have you do things to them, or you let people do things to you. So you're too small or too big, and when you're right sized, you're coming in as a peer, as an equal, though you bring different. Like with your dad, you can go 75%, he goes 25%, but you're right-sized for that particular
activity.
That's
interesting. I mean, I would say if there was anything that I had to say maybe still lingers on this I believe list, it is that idea that that I do feel and have largely always felt that everybody is my peer. Uh-huh. That doesn't translate well when you're a teenager. People don't like to be seen as the peer of a teenager. People are far more okay with that once you're 40-something.
Right. Yeah.
But that part is kind of held true.
Yeah, and I had that same issue starting at age 40 because I tended to see myself as... And I was mentored by men who were in their 70s and 80s when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And so that just sets up a different dynamic. I want to come back to Quaker practice and how that relates. For those who don't know, Quaker worship is a lot of sitting in silence.
It is. It can be. There are different, you know, like any good religion, it has had its splits. But that is kind of the traditional practice.
And the standard saw is that when what you have to say is more important than the silence, speak. Or when it contributes something that the silence is not. And making that discernment is not something we're often encouraged to in this culture.
Sure. I mean, discernment is the cornerstone to Quaker practice in the practical sense and the spiritual sense. Yeah. The term often used is until you are moved to speak,
right,
which is a little opaque, until you're moved to speak. And then all of a sudden it's not opaque anymore. Right. It's abundantly clear. Now is my moment. And I have something to say, and it's for you. That's another thing is sometimes you're moved, but it may just be for, you know, the message is for you. It's not necessarily for the room. And that happens outside of Quaker meeting all the time. This moment for me? Do I have something for this? No. Okay. You know, I have something for this? Right. Then I need to be willing to bring it to the table, to the room. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. 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 So, Gina, it has been wonderful getting to know you.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, do you want to say anything about this last piece with the Bruno Mars, featuring Bruno Mars, Uptown Funk?
I put this piece on there. It comes up at the prison quite frequently that we talk about music on BLS, which is a New York City radio station that a lot of the specifically African-American people in the prison listen to and will cite things off of. And so I had to find a song to be able to cite when we do some of our music-related stuff in the prison. And I love the song. Uh-huh. And I feel like it kind of embodies the fact that I might say a lot of really highfalutin things, but I also I don't know. I'm a mix of things. I also like a good funk song that totally starts off with an objectification of women.
Right.
I hate to admit it, and yet it is totally true.
It is one dimension, one true color in a very colorful life.
Yes.
Good to get to know you. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is that ice cold Michelle fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. Stylin', wildin', living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent. Gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. I'm too hot. Call the police and the fireman. I'm too hot. Make a dragon wanna retire, man. I'm too hot. Say my name, you know who I am. I'm too hot. And my band bought that money. Break it down. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. Don't believe me, just watch. Just watch. Don't believe me, just watch. Don't believe me, just watch.
said you hallelujah. Girl said you hallelujah. Girl said you hallelujah.